DogNation.com. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented by Marco's Pizza. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
How could you not be in just a sterling mood on a day like this? Smiles all over the place around Dog Nation World Headquarters. Part of that due to the fact that Georgia just beat Florida on Saturday. We are still basking in the glow of that. Part of that based on the fact that Georgia has a chance to own the East this upcoming Saturday. We're certainly really excited about that. And in between all of that, the thing that we're the most excited about probably at this particular moment is tonight, our Dog Nation big game preview live once again at the Marlows in Brookhaven. This may be the most fun one of these we're going to do all year long because we got a lot of great stuff to talk about on the heels of the Georgia win against Florida and, of course, looking ahead to Saturday, and a great special guest, a guy that's actually going to be with us a little bit later on in the program, John Stinchcomb, the former UGA great, going to be with us tonight at the Marlows in Brookhaven. Let me see that graphic one more time, if you don't mind, just so I can give the address here. 3575 Durden Drive in Atlanta. That's 3575 Durden Drive in Atlanta for the Marlows in Brookhaven for our Dog Nation big game preview. Really, really excited about the big event coming up there. Cannot wait for that one. That is going to be a ton of fun. All right. With all that out of the way, let me tell you that coming up in a few minutes, in addition to the appearance by John Stinchcomb, I also need to give you some info on why, if you've not been to a Marlowe's event for us yet this year, you may pick tonight to come to, and you'll make a great choice if you do, about a really cool thing we're going to be giving away. I'll give you more about that coming up in just a moment. Before that, though, the big game that we'll be previewing tonight at Marlowe's is, of course, the game coming up against the Kentucky Wildcats. And, boy, I tell you, it is already starting to see some evidence of some hype building for this one in Lexington on Saturday. It's going to be one of the biggest games for Georgia of the season. And, of course, when the season began, you'd be hard-pressed to find any Georgia fan that would have circled the Kentucky game as the day that would have this much on the line for Georgia in terms of its chances of owning the East, and Kentucky, who would like to be able to do the same thing. But I thought our buddy Connor Riley did a great job of chronicling a lot of this in a Good Day UGA this morning that you maybe saw at DogNation.com. Kentucky is taking out some billboards, believe it or not, in Times Square here, showing off some of their individual players here, trying to get some more attention for these guys. Now, I think some Georgia fans would suggest, why don't you win a big game like Georgia and then the attention will come here? Why are you trying to put the cart before the horse? But nonetheless, Kentucky here spending the money, going to Times Square, putting some of these names larger than life. You saw this at Good Day UGA this morning. Let me show you, though, a couple of the tweets myself here on a Dog Nation Daily. First of all, here's Benny Snell. And if you're listening, radio or podcast, you're only hearing this. But you can check out the video and see more of this. Kentucky football tweeting about Benny Snell and the big picture of Snell, in his uniform, kind of almost giving you like a Heisman type pose there in the streets of New York City, right there in Times Square, putting his name in light, so to speak. Snell not the only guy who got that kind of treatment, though, from the Wildcats in Times Square. We'll show you a couple more of these for what is admittedly a very good Kentucky defense. Some attention being paid to some of those guys as well. Here's another one of those, courtesy of the Kentucky football Twitter account. Josh Allen, who's been great at rushing the passer this year, apparently he's got a couple billboards up in Times Square right now, which is seemingly laughable, seemingly ludicrous, but, you know, Allen's a good player here, but having to toot your own horn seems to be a bit of a weird thing to do, but Kentucky is indeed doing that. And then the other guy, the one we referenced on a Dog Nation Daily yesterday, Cash Daniel, because of what Ben Cleveland had said about him, Cash Daniel tweets himself his own picture here and says, "Wonder if people in Times Square ever heard of Paintsville, Kentucky." They have now, because Paintsville's own Cash Daniel, apparently, they're in Times Square. Yeah, it's been a wild ride and a wild time here for Kentucky as of late. Daniel and Allen and Benny Snell all with billboards up in New York City in Times Square. The celebration on the heels of a win for Kentucky on Saturday against Missouri, one that if you were watching, you say, you know, maybe the officials did the Wildcats a favor. Kentucky doesn't seem to be necessarily feeling that way. In fact, they celebrated so much in the locker room post game that Kentucky coach Mark Stoops could actually be seen doing a little crowd surfing with his players. I think we have that image for you as well here, if you're watching on video at least, of Mark Stoops. Not the most flattering image here from Stoops. He would later joke that he's maybe been doing a little stress eating during the season. But we can show you Mark Stoops here, who's also crowd surfing, and you see him being held up there by his players. Kentucky football's Twitter account says, "We're all a Kentucky coach Mark Stoops right now. Hashtag get up." Well, clearly that's what Kentucky's trying to do. They're trying to get up for this game against Georgia on Saturday. And according to one of the guys that knows the not just the program the best, but really who knows the Kentucky fan base very well, his name is Matt Jones. He is a radio host and what's known as Kentucky Sports Radio. He's been around the Bluegrass State for a long time. And on, you know, in the aftermath of the win against Missouri and the exciting way it happens in kind of comeback fashion, and, you know, almost giving up hope, you know, completely if you're Kentucky, only to pull a victory out there late. What Matt Jones told the Paul Feinbaum show yesterday is that the anticipation that now builds for Georgia is really unlike anything we maybe seen there in Lexington in quite some time. In fact, Kentucky fans are now giving themselves to almost dream the ultimate dream. I think he's half kidding when he says this. But here's another taste of just how excited the Big Blue Nation is about Georgia's trip coming up later on Saturday. Here's Matt Jones from Feinbaum.
When you win in a game improbably, and especially a game where you probably didn't deserve to win, sometimes that makes it feel even better. So you got Kentucky fans losing their mind. They're already figuring out how much they're going to beat Alabama by in the SEC championship game. So it's a lot of fun around here.
Like I said, I think he's half kidding when he says that Kentucky fans are already figuring out how many points that Kentucky's going to beat Alabama in the SEC championship game. At least I hope he is. I believe that he probably is. But nonetheless, kind of an interesting line there from Matt Jones about what is going to happen for Georgia on Saturday. And obviously, Georgia has been in these kinds of games a lot over the last few years. You know, a couple times already this season. One against LSU, which the Dogs admittedly did not handle the environment particularly well. And then last week against Florida, where Georgia did rise to the occasion, maybe leaning on its experience in big games at the expense of Florida there. So Kentucky's going to try to create a big atmosphere, but it's an atmosphere that Georgia may actually be more comfortable in than the home team will be in Kentucky. After all, these kinds of moments are just few and far between in Lexington. However, when you really think about the challenge of playing at Kentucky, the issue here for Georgia might not necessarily be the intensity of the crowd, the excitement about what's at stake here, the winner going to actually, you know, claim the SEC East, or as we say around here, own the East. That may not be the biggest issue. The biggest issue may be, for as much hype as Kentucky's tried to create for itself with the Times Square billboards and Mark Stoops crowd surfing and all the other stuff on the Feinbaum show and everywhere else, the legitimate truth is the Kentucky defense actually is really good. I mean, I love the stats. Y'all know that. And, I mean, when you dive deep into the stats for Kentucky, one of the things you see is this is truly a legitimate defense. When Kirby Smart spoke to the media yesterday, he acknowledged that this is an experienced defense, a lot of seniors here. And when you've got guys like this who've been around for a while, the recipe for success is usually going to be found. Here is Kirby Smart giving some credit and respect to what Kentucky's going to be able to do defensively against Georgia on Saturday.
They play complementary defense. They're on the same page at all times. You don't see busts. They understand where each guy is. They leverage the ball well. They tackle well. They're extremely long in the secondary. I mean, they've got 6'2", 6'3", corners that are good tacklers. They got good safeties. Got big men up front, which is built for the kind of defense they play. And they've obviously got one of the best pass rushers in the country. They do a tremendous job of playing team defense. They're very organized, disciplined. They know the game plan. They know what they're going to take away, and they do it. It's a credit to what they built, because when you build on the long term and you have this many seniors in a group, any defense I've coached or any team that I've been involved in coaching that has this many seniors is usually pretty successful because they've played in our conference. You know, everybody wants to talk about how many stars did they have, how many great recruits did they have, how many games have these guys played. Pretty successful when you play that many games.
No doubt about that for Georgia here is dealing with that Kentucky defense is going to be a big issue. And really, you know, Benny Snell's gotten the most attention this year, but if you really want to look at what makes Kentucky more dangerous, it's probably the defense more so than the running game that's actually the bigger issue here. They like to control the clock and keep the defense off the field, but when the defense is on the field, they've done a good job. And as we said yesterday, there'll be time this week to talk about what Georgia still needs to do better on. One of those things is get better when it's facing its own short yardage situations. as much as Florida want to act like it's a national championship to have stopped Georgia down near the goal line, the truth is for Georgia, that's a moment going back to last Saturday where you need to punch that ball in. Georgia was not able to do that, and Kirby Smart also acknowledged that shortcoming here. Heading towards Kentucky, there's still plenty for Georgia that needs to be fixed, and Smart didn't mince words when he discussed that.
First thing I would say is we haven't been real good on short yards defense either. So when you look at it, third and ones haven't been our flavor on either side of the ball and haven't been as successful as we would like to be. I think it comes with a lot of combination of things. Sometimes it may be putting too much on one player, asking them to do too much. Some of it is execution. And at times we've had some really good plays calls that we didn't execute. Then other times it's on play design and play call that we didn't do a good job as coaches. And I think a combination of those things you got to improve on. Third and short is what you should want to be in, you know, from an offensive perspective, not defensively, but we got to do a better job executing in those. And some games we've gone in with a game plan that is we've converted all those. Then other games we haven't, and we didn't do a good job of that against Florida, and we got to improve it.
So the overall bottom line is Kentucky right now is a team that feels pretty good about itself. Georgia is a team that seemingly is working to get better each and every week, leading towards big moments like the one on Saturday. We told you yesterday that around here there are going to be three words that matter more so than any other this week. Those three words are own the East. I've got the T-shirt in my hand right now, the one that so many of you have already had and been wearing here for a while. Those three words are going to matter here on Saturday. Georgia tries to do it. It knows it needs to improve to make it happen. It knows that it's facing a real foe here in Kentucky to do so. The environment's going to be intense. But the truth is that's the way things should be. It ought to be a good team. It ought to be a loud stadium. It ought to be a big-time atmosphere around the city for a goal as worthy as this one, getting back to Atlanta and keeping those dreams of an even bigger championship still alive in 2018. My name is Brandon Adams. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented by Marco's Pizza. Hello to you, no matter how you get to us today. Live on video, 10 a.m., Dog Nation Facebook, YouTube, or the Dog Nation Twitter feed. On the radio at noon with our friends in Athens on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref, and in podcast form, wherever podcasts can be found, including the Apple Podcast Player, the Google Podcast Player there for the Android devices, or the world-famous DogNation.com. We're just really glad you found Dog Nation Daily here today. Really appreciate Marco's Pizza for making it possible. You know, for my family, Halloween means pizza. We don't really have time to cook anything else, and so you better believe that tomorrow we'll be dialing up that number, heading to Marco's.com to take advantage of two medium, two-topping pizzas for $6.99 each. We love that every store, every day, the Italian way, but especially in a busy week like this, Halloween, I think, the perfect time for Marco's Pizza, so check them out online at Marco's.com, and you can take advantage yourself of a great offer, two medium, two-topping pizzas for $6.99 each. All right, we'll get Jeff Sintel here in a moment. It is former Georgia great John Stinchcomb later on. All of this kind of leading towards our big event at Marlowe's here tonight. Before we do any of that, though, let's go around the doghouse here. Here on this Tuesday, brought to you by Brasstown Valley Resort and Spa in beautiful Towns County, Georgia, right down the banks of Lake Chattoog. And I think this is very, very interesting here. You know, yesterday I had some fun on Twitter with Luke Ankrum, the Florida defensive lineman, for what he apparently was bragging at one point in time about doing in the game against Georgia on Saturday. In fact, I believe we have Ankrum's Instagram post here that shows him choking Georgia tight end Jackson Harris here, and he says, you know, he's basically, you know, kind of, you know, choking him right there, and obviously he was proud enough about that to put that out on Instagram. Got a lot of heat for that. Eventually, I think he actually deletes this Instagram post and then would go on his Twitter feed, which has now become private as well, to kind of explain his actions here. Here's Luke Ankrum, the Florida defensive lineman, explaining himself on Twitter, who says, and this is what he tweeted, "For everybody think I'm choking this man, the ref was right there and seen the whole play. Obviously, y'all didn't watch the goal line play that happened. Watch and let me know when did I choke him, because obviously the picture just shows the ending results after he got hit." That's Luke Ankrum via Twitter, an account that's now gone private. Here's the thing. I actually don't get that mad about guys choking guys, you know, gouging eyes. I saw one photo that was shared with me that was even a little worse than that. Frankly, so much so that I wouldn't even show it here on the show. It's a little too not safe for work almost. But the truth is, that's what SEC football is all about, right? I mean, these are tough physical games between tough physical teams. I ain't mad at Florida for playing rough here. What I think is an absolute joke is the fact that it's celebrated after the fact in a game they lost by 19 points. This is what losers do. They brag about inconsequential stuff. And no matter what Ankrum wants to say here, it came across on Instagram as if he was bragging about this in a game in which Florida got beat all the way back to Gainesville in. So it's another reason why being a Gator hater is so much fun, because Florida in moments like this gives you so many reasons to hate. So that's one of the reasons, Luke Ankrum and everybody else, why we do our Gator Hater Updater here on a Dog Nation Daily, so we can remind them of exactly where things stand in this rivalry. In fact, it's time to do that right now. Gator Hater Updater, I am proud to let you know that it has now been 731 days since Florida has beaten Georgia. It's been 731 days since any Georgia fan has had to listen to anything from any Florida fan. We think that number is going to keep going up for years and years to come. It's our Around the Doghouse here, brought to you by Brasstown Valley Resort and Spa. And, of course, the cooler temperatures are here, which means it's a great time to get over to the banks of Lake Chetoug and beautiful Brasstown Valley Resort and Spa. Enjoy the leaves as they change color. And don't forget, there's a great offer right now, a special discount for Dog Nation Daily listeners and viewers. You can get 20% off any room booked between now and March 31st. Just use the promo code DOG18. That's all one word, spelled the way it's supposed to be, DOG18. And you can receive the Brasstown Valley Dog Nation special. The discount's available all the way up to December 31st. Also, don't forget this. A lot of you get into the doghouse this time of year because you're watching so much football. A great way to get out of the doghouse is to maybe win a great prize here from Brasstown Valley Resort and Spa. It's our Get Out of the Doghouse giveaway. One lucky winner is going to receive a 4-day, 3-night trip for two to Brasstown Valley Resort and Spa, which includes spa treatments, stable rides, two rounds of golf, and more. You just simply go to Get Out of the doghouse.com to enter. That website, once again, you can see it on your screen if you're watching, but it's Get Out of the Doghouse. Once again, dog spelled the way it's supposed to be. Get Out of the doghouse.com, and you can enter for that great Get Out of the Doghouse giveaway. And that's a lot of fun. Good luck to you and all that, and make sure you enjoy Brasstown Valley Resort, this spa, heading towards the winter here. All right, it's John Stinchcomb later on. For now, though, let's turn the page here. Let's talk to Jeff Sintel. Georgia needs some more freshman contributions. Will they get them? And exactly what is going on with John Emery Jr.? Let's find all of that out right now as we welcome in Jeff Sintel, and it's good to have you with us in the program today as well.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
Time for a Marlowe's Tavern tell-all with Jeff Sintel here on this Tuesday. And speaking of Marlowe's tonight, our Dog Nation big game preview, I told you a moment ago that I'm actually going to make an announcement in a minute about a cool giveaway we're going to do tonight. I don't want to get my T-shirt wires crossed. I just showed you the Own the East T-shirt a moment ago because those are the three words that matter this week. Own the East against Kentucky on Saturday. But it's actually a different T-shirt that I'm going to giving away at a Marlowe's tonight. So stick around for that big announcement coming up. And speaking of Marlowe's, we get our Marlowe's Tavern tell-all started on this Tuesday. Let me say hello to Jeff Sintel. Jeff, welcome back to our program. Hope you had a great weekend. It was great to see you in both St. Simons and Jacksonville over the course of the weekend. Glad to hear you made it back safely, and welcome to our program here today.
Hey, Brandon. Great, man. I would say the voice is probably maybe almost as strong as Ben Cleveland's mending bone right now.
Yeah,
so
I think
we're not 100%, but we're getting there.
It certainly sounds that way, and I think the comparison to Cleveland there is pretty accurate, and we're glad that you're soldiering through and being a part of what we're doing on our program here today. And, you know, there's a lot of stuff I want to talk to you about coming off of the freshman report that you write every week at DogNation.com. And that thing has been interesting for me, Jeff, all season long, but as we get towards the real, you know, crunch time of the season, it starts to get even more interesting now because of either guys we're getting contributions from on the Georgia side of things or guys who need to give Georgia more of a contribution. Here's where I think things start to get really interesting. So let me do a few questions off the top here for our Marlowe's Tavern tell-all on that subject. Let me start with a name that we actually haven't mentioned that much this week on the show, believe it or not, and that's Justin Fields. He did not play at all on Saturday, and the one thing, Jeff, I've cautioned my audience, at least on video when we take our comments towards the end of the show, is to not be so quick to assume that now this story is over, that Fields is not a player that's going to play. He didn't play on Saturday, but I'm not closing the door on anything else in the future for a variety of reasons here. I mean, where do you think things stand right now between Fields and Georgia on the heels of him not playing at all for the first time this season?
Yeah, that was interesting. That was the first time Fields got a DNP. But he has started, and he has made his impact in certain select games this year. I think the main thing there for Georgia with Florida is they just needed the type of effort, the all-around effort, kind of command of the whole entire Georgia offense, run game, throw game, checks, protections, audibles, that Jake Fromm was able to provide. And I know the Justin Fields question is always going to be there, and that's because he's such a strong player, such a talented player. But I think what Kirby Smart said during his press conferences regarding Justin, I think that deserves to be the matter of record right now, which is Justin's made a lot of strides. Justin's gotten a lot better. He's improved a lot over the last 2 or 3 weeks, gotten a lot of reps. But right now, Georgia has two good quarterbacks, and no matter what anything that needs to be said about Jake Fromm, that was definitely one of his best performances of his career, maybe at the most pressure-packed point of his career, outside of the Rose Bowl, outside of the SEC Championship game, and outside of the National Championship game against Alabama. And I think that's that bulk of experience carrying the load for Georgia that still keeps Justin Fields as QB, keeps Justin Fields as QB2 for Georgia. And the last thing I'll say here is simply this. I know this point gets bantered around a lot, but Trevor Lawrence had to beat out Kelly Bryant. Tua Tagovailoa had to beat out Jalen Hurts. Justin Fields, probably every bit as talented as both Lawrence and Tagovailoa, has to beat out Jake Fromm, which is clearly the most talented and experienced passer among those three guys that these hard-charging freshmen or young talents are trying to earn playing time from.
Let me play devil's advocate on that point for a minute, because I think most of what you say there is absolutely spot on. But the one thing a lot of Georgia fans are going to say is when you go down to that goal line situation where Georgia ran, I believe it was 7 plays, doesn't get in, at least on a touchdown, only one of those was a pass play. We've seen Justin Fields come in and run, read option stuff, be a running quarterback. Why not Fields right there? I mean, the only pass attempt that's tried is actually a pretty low percentage pass. Even if Aaron Rodgers is throwing that ball, the chances of success on that aren't nearly as great as running from down near the goal line. Georgia's banged up with its offensive line. Another weapon with his legs might be a valuable tool. Fields has played in every game this season. Why not play him right there in a moment when he probably is a more valuable weapon than Fromm because of the fact that's running territory, not throwing territory?
Great point there, Brandon. That's one of those that definitely deserves the debate, the fencing match, so to speak. I've got a couple theories on that. Number one, if you saw earlier in the game and then later on in the game, you saw Kirby Smart. I'll give three instances. Number one, where they go for the field goal with 6 seconds left and timeouts in the first half. Number two is when they decide to punt it from the 37-yard line. Excuse me. It just clearly seemed to me that Kirby Smart was protecting points, protecting the right to kick a field goal. That's one thing that maybe Jake Fromm will give you a better read at. Number two, maybe Justin Fields isn't as good at that jump pass, which is what Tim Tebow made famous when he was understudy to Chris Leak as he was coming up. The final thing I might say there, Brandon, is just simply Georgia has a stack of plays that it feels it would work best in that situation. Bringing Justin Fields in and taking Jake Fromm out weren't high enough on the pecking order for them to call one of those options.
It's our Marlowe's Tavern Tell-All with Jeff Sintel here on Dog Nation Daily. And in that same freshman report that you wrote at DogNation.com, one of the things I loved was the story about how guys like Jordan Davis and Brenton Cox and Tyson Campbell have apparently taken on more of a leadership role here in terms of, I guess, leading. The best way to explain this is leading some individual small group meetings with their other position group guys there, standing up and speaking about specific responsibilities within the game. Davis has only been playing only recently a whole lot more. You know, Tyson Campbell has been somewhat maligned at times for his play, but he clearly is seemingly taking on a big role behind the scenes. And obviously people have great expectations for Brenton Cox's future. Jeff, as a fan of Georgia, I take it as great news that Campbell, Cox, and Davis, in their own way here, are starting to speak up more and have the look more of leaders, because I think all three of these guys in a Georgia uniform have very bright futures.
Yeah, I think the main thing that needs to be said there, Brandon, is simply those guys those guys are all going to be leading those defensive meetings and these stalwarts in the program for at least two more seasons after that. They're being placed into positions where freshmen that are on top 10 teams are not normally expected to be in the SEC. And I thought it was a very funny story, and I thought it was a very human story, how Kirby Smart kind of deadpanned, or maybe matter-of-factly said he was about to have a heart attack in the back of the room because the three guys that Mel Tucker called upon to kind of set the course for a lot of defensive strategy for the team heading into that showdown at Florida were three guys who were still trying to make sure they look cool for their homecoming pictures on Instagram back in high school a year ago.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right, Jeff. That's a really nice thing to think about. And I've got actually some more freshmen I want to ask you about here coming up in just a moment. Let me take a minute, though, while we're doing that to remind you, it's our Marlowe's Tavern tell-all, and here on Dog Nation Daily, we're excited about being at Marlowe's tonight, Marlowe's in Brookhaven, for our big game preview. The great former Georgia offensive lineman John Stinchcomb going to be a part of that. It's going to be a lot of fun, and I told you I've got a giveaway that I'm going to do tonight, and I know that Georgia coaches and players can't be looking ahead to any game beyond Kentucky on Saturday, but I am also aware that for us, this will be our last public gathering here before the Auburn game next week. Many of you have got some Auburn folks leading into next week. You want to remind about what happened in the SEC Championship game a year ago, the game we call Dog Nation Retaliation. We had some fun last December at Gus Malzahn's expense over that when Georgia won 28-7 and worked its way back into the college or into the college football playoff as an SEC champion. Dog Nation Retaliation, one of the most fun things to happen in the 2017 season. We're going to honor that tonight in our public gathering before the Auburn game next week. So if you come to the Marlowe's in Brookhaven tonight while supplies last, we're going to give away as many Dog Nation Retaliation t-shirts as we can. So please come by and see us. Hang out with John Stinchcomb. Talk a little Georgia football with us. And you could also walk out there with a free Dog Nation Retaliation t-shirt. We're giving those away tonight as a part of our Marlowe's big game preview at the Marlowe's in Brookhaven. That's going to be a great, great event and a great, great time. Jeff, let me get back to our conversation with you about some of these freshmen. And I think that every Georgia fan who's watching closely would say that Jordan Davis has been a bit of a revelation here for the Georgia defensive line. He steps up at a time in which Georgia really needs that. The rush defense, even with Davis in the game, is not perfect, but it is certainly getting better. And now, Jeff, as we turn the calendar towards November, I've had this month circled all season long as the time in which other freshmen might start playing more, might start playing better, might start making a bigger impact. You've reported in every freshman report you've done thus far this season, I believe, that Channing Tindall's playing, then Quay Walker's playing. Jeff, if Georgia's going to win the SEC here in 2018, admittedly the Dogs be an underdog here against Alabama, but if Georgia's going to win the SEC in 2018, if Georgia's going to be a legitimate playoff threat here, I think you've got to have some more freshmen step up and play. I hope that's not the truth every season, but for now, Georgia's still in position where it needs more help from freshmen. To be unfair to ask for Tindall and Walker and guys like that to do a lot of in September, that's too soon into their college careers. But November, I don't believe, is too soon. Do you think that guys like Tindall and Walker, guys who have played but haven't made a huge impact yet, do you think they are on the doorstep here of helping out that Georgia linebacking corps, which could use an infusion of the kind of talent and athleticism that they seem to have, maybe Channing Tindall especially here? What do you make of that situation as we get towards what is really the stretch run for Georgia?
Yeah, that's very interesting. I know the number one topic is probably for Georgia fans, Dog Nation, and even Kirby Smart right now is how you fix that leaky run defense. And I think the main thing there is basically the way that inside linebackers get off blocks and how they make tackles in space. Kirby Smart even referenced it in his post-game comments. When Georgia has two guys and they have outside leverage on the back, they should be able to win that battle, and not the running back from Florida, because remember, those guys from Florida aren't like five-star backs or anything else like that. Damian Pierce, for example, was a guy that probably would be at Georgia right now if the Bulldogs thought he was a value add to the class, along with guys like Zamir White and James Cook. He just wasn't as highly rated as those guys. But to answer your question, Brandon, about lineup changes and who can rise up, I got a couple things. Number one, I would like to see Georgia see what they can do with Tay Crowder and Monty Rice maybe as the primary inside linebackers. I think that might be the best mix for success over the next two or three weeks, the remaining portion of the SEC schedule. But I know everybody wants to look at the 2018 guys, and there are some talents there. I personally think if you don't see Tindall and Walker have greater roles in this defense over the next 2 weeks, I don't know if they will be ready to make significant contributions. Sure, they'll play against UMass. Sure, they'll probably play against Georgia Tech as well. But to me, the most immediate triage I see is something we saw a glimmer of last week. A guy like Jeremiah Holloman, who made his first career start from the 2017 class. I think this is time for Georgia. This is right about the perfect time for Georgia to start doubling down and looking for value and looking for impact from its 2017 class. There's a lot of guys on there. Malik Harry, he's very close. Mark Webb, Robert Beal, he didn't make the trip because he had the loss of a loved family member. But Georgia, in my opinion, if they're going to rise close and get there to where they have a puncher's shot against Alabama, Georgia needs more guys from that class. I'm talking about guys like Walter Grant to play better, Malik Harry. I'm talking about Mark Webb, Robert Beal, even a D'Angelo Gibbs type guy. Georgia simply needs more contributions from that 2017 class. Look at a guy like Monty Rice. He only made his fourth career start of his Georgia career last week against Florida. You need more from that guy. You need more from a guy like Eric Stokes. I think it's the time now where that 2017 class has to play more, has to help Georgia more for the Bulldogs to be what the fans want it to be this year.
So I think that's really interesting, Jeff, and that's a very, very good point to make. In the time we have left here for our Marlowe's Tavern tell-all, let me turn the page over to a 2019 recruiting note. Your piece on Friday afternoon as a follow-up to the John Emery Jr. decommitment I thought was fascinating. You got a quote from John Emery Jr. You got some quotes from Emery's mother. You got some quotes from Noah Cain's father, which is another elite running back for the 2019 class, and one of those dominoes that can also fall here on the basis of the Emery decommitment. It was a loaded piece, and reading that piece, Jeff, in concert with everything else that's gone on here, it leaves me feeling that a guy like Cain is a lot more likely to emerge for Georgia than John Emery Jr. having a change of heart and recommitting after decommitting. I believe there's a very strong likelihood that Jaden Hazelwood still ends up at Georgia. I don't hear a thing when it comes to a John Emery Jr. here, at least in my head, of why he might be coming back. It seems like Emery is now leaving and that Georgia's best chance at an elite running back is now Noah Cain. Am I misreading the tea leaves based on your own reporting here?
Well, there's some update to that. I've been told that Georgia has reached out and there has been communication back and forth from Noah Cain and Georgia. That's running backs coach Dell McGee. I've heard from the Cain family that Georgia is now starting to get back into the daily mix, where it was maybe a weekly or biweekly mix, trying to keep the burner warm for Noah Cain. Now things have changed. I know there's a lot of chatter out there about Kenny McIntosh. That's a running back from Florida. There's also the thought of what Georgia's appeal would be to Ty Davis. Perhaps if Ty Davis, the LSU commit, becomes a part of the class with John Emery, does he want to be a kind of a co-lead back in the class with John Emery? Or does he want to maybe look at the chance at Georgia again, where he could be the featured back and the marquee back in the class at Georgia for 2019? Again, Davis doesn't want to be the bell cow. He doesn't want 20, 25 carries a game. He wants to be a strong part of a strong stable of backs. And that's one thing to think about there as well. Along with the renewed interest in Noah Cain, might be the chance that LSU's good vibes it is now getting with John Emery might lead to Georgia making another push at Ty Davis to come be the featured back in this 2019 class. The one thing that I think might happen, Brandon, is I can't see a way where Emery and Cain are part of the same class. Much like Emery, Cain, Trey Sanders, I can't see all of those backs linking up together, or any two of those backs linking up together at the same school. If I had to think about Georgia's options at running back right now, I think the best mix of talent, mutual interest, I do think right now, it might be Noah Cain.
So a real quick follow-up to that. I mean, obviously there's a lot to like about Ty Davis, the current LSU commit. I mean, you've talked about him before. His tape seems to really impress a lot of the people who watch tape for a living. you know, maybe this matters, maybe it doesn't, but it is fair to point out that if Georgia were to trade John Emery Jr. for Ty Davis, Georgia's chance of getting the number one recruiting class have just vanished into the ether at that point in time. You know, now if you get the right player, what the rankings were in the as a high school player ultimately don't matter, but a lot of Georgia fans are watching those rankings closely. It would seem to me almost mathematically impossible to be number one in recruiting if you trade Emery for Davis.
Well, no, you could look at other wins across the board. Certain five-star offensive linemen might come into the fold. Maybe a five-star inside linebacker might come into the fold. Maybe a near five-star at quarterback might come into the fold as well. I think there's still some potential, and maybe not with Ty Davis as a swap. And I'm glad you came back to that point, because I don't want our audience to think, oh, wow, Georgia's just going to go all in for Ty Davis, and Ty Davis will take the chance to be it. The number one guy in this class and the only guy in this class, he will jump at that rather than the chance to stay home and play for LSU. I think that's a really cozy fit right there for Ty Davis and LSU. And I think that maybe if Georgia's still seeking the number one ranking, I think the dip from the number two running back overall to maybe down to the number six running back overall might be the better thing in terms of overall rankings and things of that nature. I think right now Georgia's going to do a lot of things with his class and finishing out his class. There's talk, I'm sure we'll discuss later, about a second quarterback, maybe what Georgia does outside of Jaden Hazelwood at the wide receiver spot, and then what also Georgia can do, because if I know our audience and I know our fans, they look at that front seven and they look at the defensive line especially, and they wonder what else Georgia can get along the defensive line to look even stouter up front in the 2019 class.
Jeff, it's great stuff. We appreciate you being here, part of our Marlowe's Tavern tell-all. Of course, if you're not a Marlowe's insider, become one right now by texting the word Marlowe's, M-A-R-L-O-W-S, to 24242. You can be a Marlowe's Tavern insider with us. And, of course, we'll see you tonight. Marlowe's Dog Nation big game preview. Myself and the former Georgia great John Stinchcomb. It starts at 6. I've got Dog Nation Retaliation t-shirts to give away. It's going to be a fun night. 6 p.m. tonight. It's 3575 Durden Drive in Atlanta. 3575 Durden Drive for our Marlowe's Brookhaven location for the Dog Nation Big Game Preview. Jeff, good to have you with us here in our Marlowe's Tavern tell-all. We will look forward to speaking to you very soon.
All right, guys. Have yourself a good week.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
All right, a couple things I want to get to off what Jeff said there, and then we'll move on with our SEC Through after that. First of all, here's this. You know, Jeff talks a lot about the 2017 class there, and I asked him about the 2018 guys. I'm a big believer that when you want to improve performance, and right now Georgia needs to, Kirby Smart's been very honest about that, but improving performance requires better personnel. You can't wave a magic wand and get guys just to start playing better. With all due respect, they're already trying as hard as they possibly can. If you want to improve performance, you got to have better personnel to do so. And you know, I said, well, you know, if Georgia's going to be back to that SEC championship level here by the end of the season, it may require some 2018 linebackers emerging, stepping into the spot here and coming on big. And I thought that Jeff had a very interesting response to that. You may have heard that. He said, hold on, BA, now. You'll talk about the 2018s, but don't forget these 2017s as well. Number three class in the country from 2017. J.J. Holloman here in his second year in the program is suddenly – we talked about him on our comment section on video yesterday. He's becoming a big-time guy for this Georgia offense. Are there defensive examples of that? Mark Webb as an extra defensive back on the field. Jeff mentioned Robert Beal, who unfortunately could not be with Georgia for the Florida game, but was a big part of the LSU game, at least recording a sack anyway. I think that's a really interesting note to get from Jeff there, and it's something worth thinking about. One more quick point to make here on what we just talked to Jeff about. Involves the running back position and how quickly things can change in the world of football. You know, during this most recent offseason, spring and summer, we talked all the time, at least many of you brought up to me, that Georgia had too many running backs. And now you may blink your eye and suddenly Georgia goes from having supposedly too many to not enough. What if Elijah Holyfield goes to the NFL this year? He could. What if Brian Harrion makes a choice to make a similar decision? That choice is available to him. Hopefully neither one of those guys choose to leave, but they could choose to leave. You know, DeAndre Swift, you know, obviously when he's been healthy, he's looked great this season. We still don't know about James Cook. Georgia could go from a situation, and obviously we have, you know, great hopes that Zamir White recovers from injury, but we don't fully know how that's going to play out yet either. There are a lot of unknowns for Georgia at the running back position. It's really funny how Georgia can go from seemingly having too many to seemingly not having enough. That could happen here, which makes recruiting the 2019 running back position all of a sudden one of the more important storylines for this upcoming class, and I don't know that many of us were thinking about that. As we transition here to our SEC through, let me remind you that MyBookie is the only sports book here that Dog Nation Daily would recommend, and the reason why we do so is because they're known for the fast, no-hassle payout when you win. They also offer you great chances to, you know, you don't just have to bet the individual game winner. You can do something like a parlay where you put a little bit of money down, but you have a chance to win a whole lot more. For instance, you pick the right three teams, a $100 bet may win you as much as $600. It's a really cool thing. It's one of the reasons why you want to try MyBookie. And right now, MyBookie does have a special offer for Dog Nation Daily listeners and viewers. You can get 50% off your first deposit, but you got to go right now because you got to use the promo code Dog Nation, all one word, spelled the way it's supposed to be, DAWG. All one word, Dog Nation. When you find MyBookie online, it's MyBookie. You play, you win, you get paid. It's as simple as that after that. But use the promo code Dog Nation to get your first deposit matched 50%. But you got to act right now. Find MyBookie online. All right, tonight is a big night in the world of college football because the first college football playoff rankings will be released. And I think the SEC could play a pivotal role here. Alabama, I think the expectation would be that Alabama will be number one. Alabama's been number one in both the coaches and the AP poll all season long. But remember this, Alabama was also the overwhelming number one team in the polls last season. As the Bear Chris Felica pointed out on Twitter, they got 58 of the 60 available first-place votes in the final AP poll before the playoff ranking came out a year ago. But when the ranking came out, the first one anyway, it was Georgia that was number one, not Alabama. Could there be a surprise again tonight, Alabama not being number one? That may be a reason worth tuning in. The committee likes playing games like that. Also, another fun thing to think about, what's going to happen with LSU. I have suggested that I believe that LSU is actually going to be number two in the country tonight, ahead of Clemson. Now, I could end up being wrong on this, but a team like LSU, as a way of maybe hyping the upcoming game on Saturday against Alabama, I think we've seen stranger things from the committee than that. Watch out for the possibility that LSU comes in at number two. Georgia's going to fall somewhere at 5 or 6, but the honest truth is it probably doesn't really matter all that much. As long as Georgia keeps winning, it's in the college football playoff. But Georgia, if you want to pay attention, should be somewhere around 5 or 6 tonight. It'll be interesting to see where Kentucky lands. Does Kentucky make it into the top 10? If it does, that's a nice matchup for Georgia on Saturday. I think there's a chance the Wildcats do get the nod there. And, of course, the non-SEC teams you're paying close attention to, the Clemsons, the Notre Dames, the Michigans, they should all factor into that top 6. It should be a fun broadcast tonight with the College Football Playoff Selection Committee Top 25. We'll actually watch that with you at Marlowe's for our Dog Nation Big Game Preview. And speaking of that, let's get ready to say hello in just a moment here to the great former Georgia offensive lineman John Stinchcomb. You know, he's going to have great thoughts on everything going on with what Georgia's done this season, with what's going to happen against Kentucky on Saturday. He's actually an interesting one to speak to because he actually played a very big game in Kentucky back in 2002. So let's talk to him about that and so much more. It is a great, great former Georgia player and a terrific guy, terrific stories to tell. He'll tell a lot of these at Marlowe's tonight. It is the former Georgia great John Stinchcomb here on a Dog Nation Daily presented by Marco's Pizza. John, looking forward to being with you tonight. First of all, thank you so much for coming out and saying hello to Georgia fans. We really appreciate you sharing your time with us.
Oh, it's going to be a blast. I look forward to it. Thanks, guys.
Well, we're really excited about it as well, John. And I guess let me start with a couple of things I know are top of mind for a lot of Georgia fans here. First of all, your thoughts on what happened against Florida. I think for a lot of Georgia fans, it was a calming moment here to take some attention off of what had not happened against LSU. It was refreshing to see Georgia get back to its winning ways. You watch the games probably more closely than some do. What was your overall takeaway from what Georgia was able to get done against the Gators?
Well, we're back on track. I think there were so many questions after the LSU game, and you come in for a top 10 battle against an SEC opponent that there's so much disdain for that you hope for a great performance, and I think that's what we saw on both sides. I mean, there's still things that cause a little bit of concern anytime you have 6 plays on inside the 5-yard line after a turnover and you can't punch it in for a touchdown. I mean, that's not great, but let's not dwell on the negative. The positive is you put up 36 and your defense performs really well and creates numerous turnovers, and you get excited about the potential for this team.
Now, one of the things we saw come up on Saturday is something that you obviously know really well. That's the offensive line. You know, Andrew Thomas leaves part of that game with an injury, ends up coming back in because the guy that replaced him, Kendall Baker, also got hurt. Georgia's played without Ben Cleveland now for a while. I think Cleveland has proven himself to be one of Georgia's best offensive linemen. In a way, John, and maybe you agree with this, Georgia's actually in a better position, I think, to withstand those injuries this year than they would have been in 2017, where if you'd seen multiple starters going down with injury, it could have really, you know, devastated Georgia last season. There's more depth now. I think Cade Mays, the freshman, is credited with kind of helping out with some of that. But nonetheless, it is still a challenge when you're moving offensive linemen around as much as Georgia's been able to or needed to, and when you're having to bring in a lot of less experienced guys to certainly play in kind of a starting role. I mean, what do you think of the fact that Georgia has, I don't want to say patchwork, that's overstating it, but certainly it's dealt with some challenges along its offensive line because of injury. What do you think about the way that Georgia has handled that thus far this season?
Well, I think they're positioned themselves to be able to handle it. Georgia hasn't had the depth that they've had, that they have currently. It, without a question, the most talented and deep group in the offensive line room that Georgia's seen in I don't know how many years, but anytime you can lose or get dinged up in two starting positions and still be able to weather that storm with Andrew Thomas and Ben Cleveland, and then still be able to rotate guys in and then perform at a high level, I think it speaks volumes for what Kirby and Sam's been able to do in the offensive line room of just getting talent in the door. Cade Mays, true freshman, has been playing against high school kids last year, and he steps right in at multiple positions. And, you know, there's some bumps along the road, but you talk about a competitor. It's fun to watch him play. He's got a room to improve, but just his demeanor and his disposition of how he attacks the game, I think fans should be really excited of what's to come from him. With Andrew Thomas, I don't know the last time he's been healthy. He's such a grinder. He's a tough kid because – he hasn't been healthy much this year and continues to compete at a really demanding spot as a true sophomore left tackle. You know, once that kid's healthy, I can't wait to see what he can do.
Yeah, I think that's really well said, John. It's obviously a unique situation on Saturday because most Georgia fans don't have a lot of vivid memories of going to Kentucky to play what is a good Kentucky team. But my memory of your last trip up there in 2002, that was actually a pretty good team. And I remember there being a little bit of hype before that game. Guy Morris was the coach back then. I remember there was a story in the newspaper up there about how they had saved money to tear down the goalpost after they beat you guys. Of course, it didn't work out that way. Y'all got the win. But am I not right about this, that your last trip to Kentucky in 2002 was actually a pretty good atmosphere against a pretty good team? Y'all got a big win that day, but the build-up of the game, there was actually a little bit of hype on the Kentucky side, or am I misremembering that?
Oh, that's very much the case, and I remember being recruited by Guy. Great coach and really a great motivator. He can paint a pretty picture, and I think that's what he did a great job of that year, is getting his guys to believe – not only the guys on the team, but really the school and the community, the fan base. It was a hostile environment, and I can say that many times you go into an opponent's place, and if they have a history of not being super successful, which is a polite way of saying they were perennial losers like Kentucky had been, that year it was unique. It was very special. They felt like they had a legit chance, and we prepared that week for a battle, and I think that goes to the credit of their coaching staff of getting their guys ready and believing in what they had, similar to what you have this year. You know, they're a number 11 ranked team in the country. How many times have you said that about the Kentucky Wildcats?
Sure.
And really coming off a game that, if you watched it for 59 and a half minutes, you thought there's no chance this team's going to win it, and they still find a way to squeeze it out and remain in the discussion as one of the best teams in the top 10, top 15 in the country. So it's one of those – you got to go in ready when you prepare for a game like that, because you know that there's no quit in them. And, you know, let's be honest, I think we as Georgia fans can say – our best versus their best, we like our chances. but that means you got to put your best out there and get ready for a battle.
Without a doubt. Let me squeeze in one final question before we let you go, John. Georgia's going to try to win a division again on Saturday. That's something that's happened a few times now. But back in 2002, you were a part of the first ever Georgia team to win an SEC East. And you would also go on to, of course, win the conference there as well. But when it comes to winning that division, the SEC championship had been around for a while. And Georgia, even though the game had mostly been in Atlanta, hadn't gotten a chance to play in it. How special was it for you personally, and what are your memories of being the first Georgia team to accomplish what this Georgia team is going to try to accomplish on Saturday, which is win the division and earn itself a berth into the SEC championship game? What do you remember about that?
Well, I remember it being, we talked about the glass ceiling that existed. Nothing tangible, but for 20 years, for whatever reason, Georgia wasn't able to represent the East and go back to a SEC championship and reclaim the title. So what I remember most is we had a special group of guys, that bought in, some wonderful senior leadership, Boss Bailey, Tony Gilbert, Terrence Edwards. I mean, we just had some special guys. Obviously, there's a lot of talent in the room, but it takes a lot for a program to feel like they're wandering in and purposefully venturing into some uncharted territory for a program that hasn't been back to the top in 20 years. We wanted to reset the standard, if you will, for what it meant to be a Georgia football team and for our program. So it was a special year and something that we thought the program, University of Georgia, could continue long after we left.
Well, John, I can't wait to hear more of those stories tonight for Marlowe's big game preview there at the Marlowe's in Brookhaven. You are a great, great guest to have on hand tonight. I know a lot of Dog Nation's really excited about seeing you there. As I said before, thanks for sharing your time with us. We look forward to hanging out here a little bit, and we'll see you a little bit later on tonight.
Can't wait to see you at Marlowe's.
Looking forward to it. Really good stuff there. I mean, I just love John Stinchcomb, a terrific former player and a guy that, as you can tell there from that conversation, has still such, you know, great memories of his time there at Georgia and such a terrific appreciation for the tremendous privilege it was to be a part of. Really, you know, for those of us who lived through that 2002 season, as he said, it was a shattering of glass season for the program in many ways. That was such an important time for Georgia that, you know, now Georgia is in an era which it's trying to do even more than what the early 2000s teams did. But you can't discount how important that was to be the first to win an SEC, at least since 1982, to be the first to win a division in the history of that two-division format, the SEC championship game. John was a trailblazer there for that, and he's a huge Georgia fan now. 6 p.m. tonight, Marlowe's in Brookhaven. It is going to be a lot of fun talking about all that and so much more. We'll look forward to seeing you there and seeing you tomorrow on Dog Nation Daily.